The order of Committee of the House State Affairs, we do not have a quorum today. The president is Representative Cabina, Representative Carney, Representative Lauren Lehman is on the telephone. I am expecting Representatives Baker, Choquette, and Bruckman, as of yesterday, and one of them even today, said that they would be here. I don't know if I made it from Anchorage, so it shouldn't be that bad for them. So hopefully they will be joining us. I'd like to also recognize that Emily Larson, Representative Larson's wife, is in the audience. And Representative Larson, I talked to him yesterday. He is in Fairbanks and not able to be here today, but sends his best wishes. And we'll be reviewing the transcript or the tapes of our meeting today so that he understands the feelings of the people of the community. I'd also like to recognize John Steen, who's the mayor of Wasilla, and Jewel Peterson, who's mayor of Houston, are also here. Maybe I would comment a little bit first that the newspaper article on the front page wasn't real glowing today about not having enough advertisement for this meeting. I certainly apologize. Representative Carney, I had promised him back in the session that at some point when we had a chance we would hear his bill, House Bill 198, in his area at some time. And we had some hearings in Fairbanks on Tuesday and thought that this was a good time. And the closer we got to Christmas, it was going to be a bad time. So we did send out letters to the city. We faxed some, I believe it was as much as 2 weeks ago. The senior citizens centers were sent letters. So we will do what we can do today, and if necessary, try to in the future have another hearing. Our purpose, of course, is to have public input into the legislative process and the bills before our committee. We are well aware of most of the communities, the official positions of the borough and most of the towns. They do a very good job of letting us know how they feel about legislation that comes before us. The purpose of having hearings out in the communities is to try to get as much as we can from the normal everyday person out there of how these programs affect them and whatnot. So with that, the first thing I'd like to hear is HJR 6. House Joint Resolution 6 is a proposed constitutional amendment. It's introduced by Representative Lauren Lehman, has also co-sponsors of Representatives Sharp, Zawacki, Phillips, Choquette, and Miller. It proposes a constitutional amendment which would limit the regular sessions of Alaska legislature to only 90 days. Representative Lehman is on the teleconference. I would like to announce that Representative Dave Choquette has now joined us right on time. And thank you. Thank you for being here. Whatever you want.
I'm going to sit next to Pat.
Representative Lehman.
Thank you. Chairman Cabina and Representative Choquette and Representative Carney and other distinguished honorable guests and members of the community in the audience. I appreciate just the ability to talk about this and to talk about it in Palmer, and I really appreciate Representative Cabina, you're allowing me to participate by teleconference. When the weather turned bad and my conflicts on the evening side made it really tough for me to come up and see do this in person and get back in time, and I appreciate what you've done. I just want to outline for the committee again the salient features. I mean, it's a fairly simple change to change from court has interpreted. Could you hold just for a second? I need to take care of another call coming in. I hate to do this to you.
Well, thank you for your testimony, Representative Lehman. We will go on now.
And I'm back with you. Sorry to do that to you.
Right on time.
Okay. But the point is that in reducing the session length 31 days, there are several benefits. The first, and I think this is probably the foremost one, is it enhances the ability of Alaska to have more of what I term a citizen legislature. Now, obviously we have citizens who serve now, but there are many people who perhaps are excluded from the process the ability because the part-time nature of serving and of doing other work. And I know, Mr. Chairman, you and I both, and as well as other people, have difficulties in meshing our other professions with serving in the legislature. And I think that this would just open up the opportunity to more people so common citizens can have a chance to serve. The second is, and a very important one, is that it would save us money. The legislative agency estimates that a session costs us $50,000 a day. Removing 31 days of a regular session would save about $1.5 million each year. And the third point is that it would make it easier for others to do business with us. It is expensive for people to travel to Juneau and to call Juneau. And if we focus and concentrate our efforts in a shorter period of time, I believe it would also help these people in communicating with us. So those are the three key features I think are benefits to it. Typically, those who would argue against it would probably focus on a couple different areas. The first one that I hear fairly often is that it would weaken the legislature and would further strengthen the executive branch. I don't see this happening that way. I think that we still have the power of the purse, establishing the budget. We still are a legislature. We still have legislative authority. It's just a matter of focusing our time in a shorter period and getting out. We still obviously could have hearings during the interim if we so desire. And the second one, I might mention that on the first one, Representative Larson has mentioned that one to me. I know his concern is that we maintain a strong legislature, and I agree with him. I think that that's important. I think it's important for us as a legislature to exert our proper rights as a legislature, and yet I believe if we would establish a work plan within that 90-day time frame, we would have a lot more credibility in the eyes of the Alaska public if we can get our work done in a shorter period of time. The second point that is usually made by those who don't agree with me on this is that there would be insufficient time to get the legislature's business done. I'm not speaking from a long historical background of service like Senator Curtula or even Representative Larson in their length of service, but in the time that I've been in the legislature, I've seen that most of our work gets done, or at least the fruition of our work gets done in the final 2 weeks. I know there's a lot of committee work and the things that take place to get to that point, but if we compress our time schedule and know that we have to hit the ground running, I believe we can get it done. And I just note that other states, many other states, I think something like 18 states limit their session lengths to 61 days or less. And I think if others can do it, we certainly can in Alaska, because I believe that Alaskans are every bit as sharp, as smart, and organized as there are in other states, and perhaps even a little more so. And I don't want to take any more of your time, but be happy to respond to your questions or comments.
Thank you, Representative Lehman. I might state maybe a couple of the arguments against a shorter session. Originally, the Alaska Constitution did not have a limit. I believe it was in 1984 that the voters passed a constitutional amendment to limit it to 120 days. I think probably the biggest argument against having a limit is of that duration is, are you going to rush legislation? Are you going to have issues of complicated and major importance that you're going to rush through and maybe pass bad bills, make bad law? And I tell you an example just this year, even with the 120-day limit, and that was the Mental Health Lands Trust Bill. A very important matter to us, a bill we passed, I believe, with only one or two no votes at the end of the session. I know that not very many of us read the entire bill. It came to us, right at the end. We knew we were working on it. We trusted a couple people in each body to really work on that and try to come up with a solution. And now once it's passed, I'm not sure that we did the right thing. Obviously, very complicated issue. And a lot of the things that we do nowadays are very complicated. Some people could say if we had less lawyers and more sixth grade teachers, why they wouldn't be so complicated. We could simplify them. But facts are that they are complicated. Certainly would save money for the state. And, you know, maybe that is another way to look at it or address it. There's a couple of states that rather than limiting the number of days in the session, they limit the number of days that legislators get paid their per diem in the session. And while you don't say, all right, you can only meet for 90 days, but maybe you only get paid for 90 days. And I would suggest that that might help limit the number of days also, but when there are important things to be dealt with, you still have that option to do so. Representative Choquette, I would like to say we have also been joined by Representative Randy Phillips. Bankreach, join us. Representative Choquette.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm a co-sponsor in this bill, and I'm a co-sponsor in this bill because I feel it's coming along the right track. I think Representative Lehman with the mental health issue, if we'd had a little more jump on the gun, there could have been a lot of that work done during the interim. Don't you agree?
Representative Choquette and Representative Kavina and others there, you know, your point on the mental health issue, I agree, a very complex issue, and I was one of those who spent many hours and several weekends working on it, and I agree with you. We come down to the end, you know, you're never sure on a complex issue if it's perfect, and it probably isn't, but I still think that it was a reasonable solution, and in many respects, we were forced into a time frame to come to it. It almost seems like it's human nature to procrastinate until the last possible time to get something done. And I think had we had 90 days, it probably would have been about the 65th day or so when people said, hey, you know, we have to come to some solution. We're running out of time. And I think that human nature being what it is, we probably would reach approximately the same conclusions with the same detail of thought into it. So I'm not convinced that we necessarily reach better conclusions with more time. But on the other hand, Mr. Chairman, there certainly is the allowance to extend ourselves. If there are circumstances where we need more time, we have that option of extending ourselves for, you know, a 10-day period or so. And did I kind of respond to your question, Representative Choquette?
Representative Lehman, Mr. Chairman.
I can just barely hear you, and I'm sorry for that, but if you could speak toward the speakerphone a little better, I can hear you better.
Yeah, I'm a lot better fisherman than you are.
I know that you occasionally tell a lie, and I just wanted the public to know that you just told one.
Well, in any case, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lehman, I guess what I'm saying that is if this body knew, and this is one of the key factors and the reason I put my sponsorship on this piece of legislation that you introduced, is if this body knew that it had 90 days, period, to complete its legislation, that was it, I foresee that possibly we would do a little more work in the interim in getting our legislation to the point of the best degree of compatibility we can. Do you agree on that, sir?
Well, yes, I agree with that. In the particular case of the mental health settlement, it was so complex that the beneficiaries and those representing them were coming to the table. The legislature was part of it, and the administration was part of it, and then the part that wasn't at the table, but we essentially reserved a spot for them in our minds is the court, because the court has to approve that one too, and so we had to come up with a solution that meets the requirements of the court. In that particular case, the attorneys for the beneficiaries were, first came up with a very aggressive proposal, and the legislature and the administration was saying, no, we can't do that. And there are many of us in the legislature trying to work hard to come up with a solution. But in this case, you had several entities working together, and it's just a difficult thing to work together. But I think that you're right, Representative Choquette, that given a shorter period of time, if we knew that we had to have that solution by April 15th instead of May 15th, then I think we would have probably put it on a tighter time schedule and made it happen. That's I don't know for sure, but I think it's just human nature. I've been involved in enough things. I guess maybe I'm telling on myself. I tend to procrastinate and do things, close to the deadlines, and I think that we probably all do that. And if we set a more aggressive deadline, I think we can probably accomplish the same things.
All right, Representative Lehman, thank you. I appreciate that response.
Is there anyone in the audience? I see no one has signed up to testify on this. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to briefly, Rose?
For the benefit of those that are at Anchorage, I'm Rose Palmquist, president of Older Persons Action Group, but also very much interested in economic development. And as such, I have been named for some time now to the Matsu Borough Port Commission. I also, for a long time, in fact, most of my adult life, I have been a government observer. It is my conclusion that the thing that has not been addressed, which is very important in the area of economic opportunity, and that is, especially if you're talking about resources, access. You need access in politics also. And I am definitely of the opinion that a 90-day session would, in the first place, strengthen the executive and weaken the legislature. I think it would increase expenses by the time you got into it, not lessen the expenses. The reason it would increase the expenses is because you would have to either rely on more studies and research, or you would have to have legislative interim commissions, or you would leave it in the hands of the executive branch. And I can't see that you would be saving any money. But citizens need access. I have practically no, in spite of the fact that I have had personal invitations to visit the governor. Nevertheless, I have very little opportunity to see the governor. I do have opportunity to see my representatives and others. As a citizen, I got to see the chairman of this of the State Affairs Committee, and of course, I got to see my own delegation. So as a citizen, and I'm one of how many? Quite a few in this state. I have access to the legislature that I do not have to the executive branch. And I'm going to cut that short at that point since you asked me to be short, but I could say more. I could go on and on for a while in the whole area of the political arena.
Thank you, Rose. Mayor? When you do come up to the microphone, each of you or any of you, would you please, each time, please state your name and official position, excuse me, so we have it on the record.
My name is John Stein, and I'm speaking as an individual resident of the city of Wasilla on House Joint Resolution Number 6. The first thing I would say that I think if there was positive consideration given to House Bill 198, you'd probably cut out enough travel time that you could get your session over in 90 days. The second thing is, and this is not actually exactly on the subject, but it appears to me that with an annual session, the staff and the administration spend about half the year getting ready for it and half the year recovering from it. And the only thing that I would suggest that might improve that situation would be to look at some kind of biennial system like Oregon has and give us a year for a breather to catch up with the legislative policies. And I think something like that might actually improve access of the people to the legislature because the legislators would be at home more and be perhaps more accessible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. I know that a number of us have talked about, Representative Phillips has been around in the legislature longer than any of the rest of us, but some of us new guys have said, well, why don't we have a two-year budget instead of trying to write that budget every year? It seems like it would save us a lot of time. I was reviewing a document that I believe it was from our legal department that just threw all kinds of roadblocks at it, how hard it would be to get. It probably would be hard to get started, and it might take a few years to actually get there, but it, I think that's probably the best way to cut down on our. And then we could still meet, even if you met every year. But when you don't have the budget to deal with, you really are you're limiting what you're dealing with in be far shorter time. So, and then you could just adjust that budget maybe for the second year or something. But you spend so much time on the money issues. All right, was there anyone else that would like to speak on this? All right, Rep. Sam Lehman, thank you very much. We will definitely hear this bill again when we get back to Juneau in regular session.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think that is a good little hearing, and drive carefully on the way back home. I'm sure the roads are going to be slick.
Yeah. Good night.
Good night.
I should note that I have also a memorandum from Mark Hanley, Representative Mark Hanley, supporting this. All right, we had on the agenda for 5 o'clock the feature of the longevity program. We do not in this committee at this time, although we did have some, have any bills dealing with the longevity program. A number of newspaper articles and have been put out in the paper. Governor originally this year proposed that they cut the payments back 10% and increase the number of years to be eligible for it from 65 to 67. Those of us in the legislature are in our discussions were worried about where this program is going. Originally, it was to benefit the pioneers, people that were here before statehood, people that helped build this state, people that were working at it before the oil money started flowing, and it was their reward. Of course, the courts have ruled since then that you cannot limit a program because somebody was here an extended period of time. And they've ruled that a year is the most that we can require someone, a resident, to stay off that program. So once they've been here a year, they're eligible for it if they meet the other requirements. So this program has grown. Our budget problems that we're going to have, and Representative Phillips again is on the Finance Committee, we have to look as legislators, what are we going to do in these years to come? And the longevity program, rather than being what it was originally for, is now mushrooming both budget-wise and the number of people. So we are here mainly to ask any of you that have some way that you think the longevity program should be changed to ensure that it is here to stay and to meet its original purposes, or do you think that we should do away with it? Do you think that there are some other alternatives? A couple years ago, the legislature passed a bill on an annuity program. It was sponsored by Senator Gratula. Governor Cooper at that time felt that, for whatever reason, that he did not like the bill, and it was vetoed. That bill is now in the Senate Rules Committee, and if it passes the Senate next year, our committee will be the first committee of referral for it. We don't know what the governor is going to propose in his budget this year, but we read the same papers you guys do, and the papers seem to indicate that he is backing off on a number of his cuts that he wanted to make last year, and that he's going to submit a status quo budget. If that be the case, then I assume he will not be proposing any cuts in it. Maybe I'll throw it out to the legislators here first. If they'd like to say something on this, then we'll open it up to the public. Representative Phillips.
For the public's purpose, that bill you just mentioned was in Senate Rules. Oh, you got to push this?
No, but Dr. Close.
Oh, okay. Can the people in the audience hear all right? We have no one on the teleconference.
Is somebody on the teleconference, too?
No, he's off.
Oh, Are we on teleconference?
No.
Oh, I can yell. Gene, you might want to mention the Senate bill and the Senate Rules Committee. I'm going to ask the question. I already know the answer, but they may not know. It's essentially is the same bill as the old Senate Bill 56 that Gurtula introduced. Is that right? Is that correct?
Yes.
The annuities.
Yeah. Yes.
That's what I wanted to make sure that people know that.
You know, personally, I think that's a good bill, but
yeah, so
that bill's not really in our committee. But if other people have comments on that bill, if they understand it or know what the old one was, they're very similar, I'd like to hear that. Representative Choquette?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a real brief statement. Something's got to give here. I honestly believe that. Something's got to be put in the hopper and worked on. When we heard this concept in Fairbanks, we asked the people with the Pioneer Homes and some other really good, concerned people that were retired to come up with some answers and some suggestions. But I think it would be very fair to say, Rose, that we got to come up with something. I don't think it can continue the way it's going for too many more years. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. I have some people. Is there...
Together.
Hello? Mom? How'd you know I... Yeah, yes, it is. Hold on just a minute. I'm going to switch you over. Oh. And who do we have online?
This is Bruce Aronson, the Deputy Director for the Division of Pioneers Benefits. I also administer the Longevity Bonus Program.
Okay, thank you for being with us, Bruce. We're going to... do you have anything you want to say other than just ask questions? Is that answer questions, right?
No, I'm just here to help if in any way. I just see this as an opportunity to explain the program and maybe receive any kind of comments or suggestions on how to make it better.
Is there anyone in the public that would like to come forward and talk a little bit about the Longevity Bonus Program? All right, come right on up.
Come right on up.
Please state your name and if you're representing anyone for the record.
I'm Minnie Fisher from Wasilla, and on this bill I'm representing myself. And I have before me Senate Bill number 8, State Affairs, and it is a nudity bill. And as of the 4th, 1991, it was referred to finance, and I'm for this bill. It is sponsored by Senator Katula and Senator Hoffman.
So, is that the annuity bill?
Yes, it is.
So you believe that is a good way for the longevity program to go forward?
Yes, I do. And if it was in effect years ago, I would have been on it.
Thank you. Right behind Rose, and then we'll go here, and then we'll go to Rose. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Carl Gonder from Outer Big Lake.
Wow.
I am a recipient of the Longevity Bonus Program. My wife is also. Now, I was here before statehood began, but my wife was delayed a few months, and so she didn't quite make it. So we have a little division in our family about who's eligible and who's a pioneer and who isn't. And so she isn't here tonight to represent herself, so I can go ahead and talk. I don't remember too much about Senator Katula's bill, but I think if that represents some sort of salvation to our program, I think it probably would be expedient for the legislature to proceed with it and try to get it done. Now, I'm not one of those who's been sticking his head in the sand and feeling that this money from the oil wells is going to go on forever. There are a lot of people that think that it is. But they better watch out, because someday, if this goes on, our whole ceiling is going to come crashing down around our heads. We're not going to have money for schools. We're not going to have money for public safety. We're not going to have money for anything else. And we better get with the program and solve this now, not wait until a ceiling falls in on us. And if we can't get that annuity thing passed, I would say, hey, one of the best things you can do is scrap the whole program and let the carpetbaggers go back south where they belong instead of coming up here and dipping their fists into our money. Now, that's the way I look at it. And I realize there's probably a lot of people in the valley who would like to throw rocks at me for saying that, because we've had some pretty hefty arguments at the senior center from people who feel that, well, they've been up here 2 years and by golly, they deserve that money. The people who were here and put up with conditions before statehood and built this state are the people for whom this program was originated, and they are the people who deserve it. And if we have to give it to the entire United States, hey, there's no way we can do it, and we better recognize it now and get out of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. Representative Choquette.
Thank you, Carl. I appreciate that testimony very much. You're aware of the legal constraints in terms of how this has been determined by the courts.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
And
I think the courts were screwy on it, too.
Well, I tell you, you wouldn't be alone in that thought, because I'm fully aware of what the original concept of the longevity bonus was. Unfortunately, we have to deal with reality, and I think you're correct in your assumption that something's got to happen before we really get into a mess. I mean, we fought hard for educational funds this year, and I appreciate your point very much. Thank you.
You know, I think that's one thing that all of us in the legislature don't want to see happening is the senior citizens in the education community, both of which are very well supported in the legislature, come in at each other and trying to compete for the same dollars and start having bad feelings. And they got 5%, why didn't we get 5%? And try to find a solution so that we can protect the program and not pit people against each other. That's what we don't want to do.
If I may add just another afterthought, hey, if we knocked off the whole program, you would see an exodus from Alaska of probably about 20,000 people. Yeah. But then we wouldn't be saving anything on our schools, but we would be saving money on senior programs, which the state partially subsidizes. It wouldn't cost us so much to operate our senior centers. It wouldn't cost us so much for a lot of the other programs. It would cost us less for our public safety people, and there are a lot of other ways that a reduced population would save us a bundle of money. Now, let's not say that, well, this money would not be circulated in the economy of the state. It certainly would, because we're going to have to use that money for other purposes. So the money is not going to be lost to our economy. Let's not accept that kind of an argument from somebody, but I think that the state would save a whole bundle of money otherwise. Now, I would hate to see the senior citizens who deserve this money go without it. But I think by and large, there are so many of them that see the point this same way, I don't think we'd have a real problem with it.
Thank you, sir.
Feel right at home here.
My name is Jean Woods, and I'm with Pioneers of Alaska Auxiliary 11. And I've been involved in working on programs and supporting the longevity bonus, not quite as long as Rose, but almost as long. And we all know what the longevity bonus was intended to do. And I would like to see the courts say, okay, people, why don't we try and restrict this? Why not say you had to have paid income taxes in Alaska before you're eligible? But I'm sure the courts would say that's not right either. But I think we need to also remember that the elderly do put a lot of money into the economy. And the latest figures I have, Rose says that they've got some figures they're working on now, and they're even larger. But as of April 1, 1991, the amount of money that came from the retirees in the state of Alaska. This included federal, military, Social Security, SSI, state retirement, labor unions, corporate, Medicare, and veterans benefits. And it was in excess of $635 million. And this is a conservative amount because it doesn't include money from private investments or annuities from 401k plans. And if you use the multiplier of 1.8, the impact is over $1 billion on the economy of Alaska. So if we do cut this off, we will lose a lot of money. Like Mr. Gonner said, there probably would be 20,000 people that after they got their dividend check, they would leave the state. Is there not some way that we can convince the people in the legislature to go to the annuity plan? This has been the official position of the Pioneers of Alaska statewide, that we go to the annuity plan. That also then will cut down on those people that are already in the state. If they choose not to join the annuity plan, then they will not be eligible. And I'd also like to comment on one other thing. When I first came here, there were no elderly people. Nobody that I knew very well. There were a few of them that had grandparents here, but they were only people that came up with the colonists that happened to have started, you know, second, third generation, that they had elderly people here. And now we see them all the time, and I agree, we do have a problem. I could not believe the immigration that we have for people to get the benefits. They come here, they're 30 days, they want the low-income housing, they want to sign up for the bonus, they want their dividend fund, they want tax exemptions, they want the free license plates, you know, any senior benefits that are here, they're here to get them. And it's a problem, and I know the oil money is going to run out, but if there is any way at all that you can resolve this problem and still keep the longevity bonus in existence, it will keep the elderly that are already here, and it will enable some of us that are older but don't consider ourselves the elderly yet to stay here, because it is not the most economical place in the world to retire. And many people are able to stay here because of the longevity bonus, particularly if it's a couple, that's $6,000 a year, and that does make the difference. So I would urge you all to seriously consider the annuity program. Thank you.
No, in defense of the legislature, they did pass this bill once, and my understanding, or we were told at the Fairbanks hearing a couple days ago, that the reason Governor Cooper vetoed that is that he didn't want to go down in history as the man that touched the permanent fund dividend program. And that's what happens in essence, because people would contribute their permanent fund check into this annuity so that they can continue the longevity bonus, and it'd be a sliding scale. So every year, the state would have to put up less and less money for it.
I'm well aware of how it was to work. I've also talked to some of the older people that are already grandfathered into the program that said that they would be happy to turn over their dividend fund. The way the one gentleman put it to me was, I give the state back the $900 they give me, and I get $3,000. Mm-hmm. He says that's quite a deal.
Yeah.
He said I would have no objection to that.
Yeah.
But I talked to some older people today, and they said, no, I want both.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's the problem. If we don't watch it, see, we don't pay taxes in this state. We pay city and borough.
I'm well aware of it.
But the state would really be better off if we had a couple hundred thousand people less financially, because we get the same amount of money, so almost all from oil. So
85% comes from oil.
Yes,
I'm well aware of it. And if you can find out a way legally to say you have to have paid income tax in Alaska to be eligible for the longevity bonus, I'm sure many of us would say that was great, too.
Yes.
But I don't think the courts would accept
no.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gene. Lipson Phillips, do you have something?
Well, I was just going to answer your question that the legislature did indeed pass it once before, and the official response from Cooper was that we had plenty of money at that time, you need not worry about it. And that's what that was along his letter. When the governor vetoes something, he sends a letter along with the veto, and that was inside his veto letter. I think the legislature, if not this year, next year, the annuities, I support the annuities because I think it's the most viable program, not only financially, politically, socially, and from a justice point of view. And I think the legislature as a whole will probably end up voting for that versus something else. And I think Governor Hickel probably will not veto that type of legislation. I can't speak for him, but my observations, I think he'll just let it become law. But I think annuities is about the only way we can get out of this mess and do it from a justice point of view and be fair to everybody.
Rose?
Go back to June 9th.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what we're doing.
Well, we haven't got it in the House yet, yeah. But we thought we were going to get it last year,
yeah.
Actually.
That's what I thought.
I'm not sure why it didn't come to us yet. Representative Chiquette, did you have anything to add?
No, I wanted to recognize Representative Phillips.
Rose?
Yes, I'm Rose Palmquist. This time I am reappointed by the new president of the Grand Igloo to be on the Legislative Government Committee for the Pioneers of Alaska. I am again president of Older Persons Action Group. This is my 12th year, or maybe going on 13th. But anyway, so I represent the official position of the Pioneers and the official position of OPEG. And they are the same. And that position is, as long as the state can afford to pay the longevity bonus out of the general fund, that they should do so. Should that general fund be insufficient to cover all of the expenses of the state, then we recommend some form of annuity. There are a number of advantages to the annuity, and on behalf of OPEG and the Pioneers, I testified when Pat Pershow, the senator, had administrative ways of cutting the amount of money that it would take to fund the longevity bonus program. The problem that we saw at that time, and it is still the problem that we see now, and that is let the people decide whether they want to be in the program or not. And the annuity plan, whichever it is, whether you dip into the permanent fund dividend, and there is some logic for that, or some other method of funding the annuity. But people either can stay in the program, and the state's plan on the annuity is a good one because, let's say that, let's just take Mr. Choquette there. His chance to get the longevity bonus when he is 65 is to begin to ante into it at some time before he reaches 65. And the logical age would be like somewhere between 45 and 50 years of age. If he said, well, I can do better with my money than my permanent fund dividend or other monies, than to let the state invest it in my annuity account, well, that's his choice. Some people will probably not enter into the program, and I would foresee that the number of participants in the program would reduce. The position of the legislature is not only the position of the individual elderly in their district. The legislature has the position, and should have the position, of what is best for the state. There are advantages to the increase of the number of people on the longevity program. A good many of them have relatives here. The population becomes more balanced. We still are one of the youngest states in the nation because we don't have the same number of elderly that other states have. Having the older generations around, that's the expanded family, which comes together whenever there is a need in the family. So, if you guys want the state to have fewer people and reduce it from 545,000, which we had in this last census, to 345,000, the state will not gain. There's a study put out by the Retired Federal Employees Association, which made an analysis of states that lost elderly population as against those that gained elderly populations. And what they found was, and Alaska is one of them, that this state loses economic revenues by having the tendency for our people, when they retire, to still go to some southern locality. And who were the gaining states? They were the southern and southwestern states. So where we go, we take our assets with us. And it isn't just the money we get from the government. The figures that Gene Woods quoted, which were last year's figures, of only the monies that we could easily verify of money spent by people who are retired, and mainly those who are 65 in this state. It did not have interest monies. It did not have any of our wages. And I have been an paid employee in this state, and as you know, that I am 85 years old, and I have only quit drawing a salary last November. Not this month, November. A year ago this November. At one time, we had the figure from the Department of Labor, and I have two letters from the present ex-commissioner of labor, who is now the commissioner of administration, that we will get the figures again, and that almost doubles the figures that Gene had. So it goes from over $500 million to over $1 billion. And what resource do you have, or what industry do you have, that equals more than $1 billion per year for the state? So think about what's good for the state, not just what's good for the elderly. If you find, and addressing whether the bill would go through or not, my impression is, and I have not spoken to the governor on that subject, is that what I have read about what the governor has said, the quotes in the paper, is that he would probably okay the bill. And my big point about the annuity plan, and whether you amend Senate Bill 8 or not, I am not addressing that. But some annuity plan gives the recipient a choice. It isn't the choice of the administration. And so the pioneers, at their last convention, continued their policy formally and by motion. And I know what the motion is because I made it. And it passed. And the official position of Older Persons Action Group. And those two organizations certainly have heavy representation in all of the seniors of this state. And they do favor funding the longevity bonus from the general fund as long as you can. And when you can't, adopt an annuity plan. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my name is Lucille Fry, and I'm just representing myself. I just had one brief comment to make, and I kind of feel that if you reach the point where you have to do away completely with the longevity thing, that it would be better to do away with that and continue support for the local property taxes on senior citizens' homes. I think, given the choice as to whether you have one or the other, that would be a serious item to consider. That's all I had. Thank you.
You know, the problem with that program, of course, is that we put it in the books, and it says that the senior citizens and veterans get an exemption. And how many years, Representative Phillips, have we not funded that, and therefore the local governments, the borough, and municipalities end up paying that themselves?
This was why I was saying this, that it should be funded by the state rather than the local people on that one, if you have to make a choice. And you know,
the problem we have in that, every time we are, as a state, are short of money and the legislature puts a budget together, they see where they can skimp, and they've done it on longevity bonus and only funded it for 10 months rather than 12, and then the next year you go back and put enough money in to finish it off. It happens quite often on the local tax, property tax forgiveness. They don't put enough money in there. And, of course, this is another one about taking over Class 3 roads that I think municipalities ought to think about, is what's the guarantee that the state's going to pay them every year to maintain those roads?
Well, I can tell you how you can do it.
Another subject, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to start.
I was just trying to save you your roads, that's all.
Go ahead. Other comments from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, just a quick observation. That would surely require the ownership of property for the people that were involved in the program.
As I say, it was just a thought that occurred to me.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on longevity bonus or specifically or a senior citizens issue in particular? If not, what's the name, Bill? Bruce?
Yes.
Do you want to throw in anything after the comments you've heard?
No, the comments are consistent, have been over the last year or so regarding the annuity bill. I didn't know if anybody had any questions otherwise.
Let's, Representative Phillips does.
I have one quick recommendation to make to Mr. Aronson.
Okay, Representative Phillips.
Go ahead. Youth.
I do suggest that the administration of the longevity bonus be tightened up considerably along the lines of detecting fraud, and secondly, tightening up on the violations of the intent of the bill, which says that the longevity bonus is to encourage people to remain in the state. And I have been hearing statements here that people cannot stay out of the state for 6 months, and that is against both the Pioneer's intent and OPEC's.
Thank you, Rose. Bruce, what is the rule? How long can they be out of state?
People can be gone up to 90 consecutive days for no reason. For example, they could be vacationing. They have to return to the state for 10 days and then maybe gone another 90 days. That was a liberalization of the rules that became effective last December 1990.
And it was done by the administration.
Was that regulation that changed that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Bruce.
Bruce, I think that's what Rose, this is Randy Phillips, I think that's what Rose was referring to about tightening up that regulation. But I'll let you guys deal with that later. I just have one basic question. How many people we have on longevity bonus as of this month's, I don't want to call it payroll, but whatever you want to call it, the words for it.
Would you like to know how many checks were actually issued?
Yes.
Okay.
This month. If not, last month.
We issued 21,119 checks November 1st.
Okay, is this a low cycle? The low part of the year, or is it the high part of the year?
It's coming into a period of time where we have a gentle increase based on historical patterns. The entire program, though, is growing. The program, because of the rules, it's hard to predict exactly month for month because last December we changed the absence rules. So there are people who are taking vacations now and plus additional people coming on the program. The predictions are within 100 or so warrants a month. Overall, we are going to be spending about $63.5 million this fiscal year.
Okay.
Do you know the number, do you have it available about what it was last November 1st?
November 1st, we issued 20,274 checks.
So we almost 900 more.
About 100 a month, like you said.
How about a year? You got a year back from that?
Yeah, we issued 18,933.
So we're picking up 1,000 a year.
Approximately.
And we probably have no way of telling how many of those people are really long-term residents and how many of them are the year or so, do we?
Well, last May, we looked at the applications that came in for that 1 month just to find out. We had 268 applications that month. Approximately 20% were people who have residency of 2 years or less.
Yep.
Representative Carney.
Yeah, Bruce, do you have any figures on the number of people who are taking advantage of the new 180-day absence allowed?
Not yet. We have kind of things going both ways. I have some people who were prevented by the old rules from being on the program. the old rules, if you recall, a person could be gone no more than 90 days in the preceding 12 months. So we had some people who were part-year residents of Alaska. They lived maybe half a year or so down in Arizona or California, and are now claiming to get back on the program because they will not be absent more than 90 consecutive days at a time. So I'm getting a handful of applicants getting back on the program who had been on it way back when and then simply spent too much of the year outside. So they'll be up here mostly in the spring to early fall through the summer and maybe receive 6-8 checks a year where before they were disqualified. I don't have the other numbers. There was a belief when these regulations were adopted that a good number of people would take longer vacations and that would save the state money.
It sounds as though you're on top of the activity of this program. Do you have, or could you make available, a graph that indicates the growth based on and the number of years that people have lived here for the last, say, 5 years?
Yes. Before me, I've got the last 4 years on one particular spreadsheet which shows that. But, yeah, that's easy enough to produce. But if you're aware of the statistics prepared by the Department of Labor, the 65-plus population group in Alaska is growing very dramatically over the years. We're looking at 5-plus percent growth for the next couple, 3 years, and then dropping down, I think, to around 4%, the high 3%, and then growing again. And the population growth is quite significant for this program overall.
This projection, then, is based on people who already live here, not the estimate of people who will be coming in?
The estimates for future years are based on the Department of Labor, which looks at in-migration, out-migration, death statistics, etc.
Thank you, Bruce.
All right, any other comments on longevity bonus or others? All right, thank you, Bruce, for being with us. I appreciate it.
Very good. If any other questions, just give a call.
All right, sir.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You should have this spreadsheet.
You want to go to your bill?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to go to your bill?
Back in the town here.
Yeah.
There you
go. Got a meeting.
The next bill before the committee is House Bill 198. House Bill 198, sponsored by Representative Carney, co-sponsored by Representatives Phillips, Barnes, and Mike Miller. Or is that Mary Miller? That's Mary. It's an act relating to the location and the convening of the legislature in regular session and providing for effective date. Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate very much your holding hearings here in this community on this legislation. As you all know, we've seemed to have lost the opportunity to move the state capital to a place in central Alaska where people have better access. It was my idea that we should think in terms of moving the legislature so that the legislature would be more accessible to the public. And so I introduced this piece of legislation to do that. I think the Matanuska Susitna Burr is a logical location because of its proximity to Anchorage. There is a certain amount of jealousy within the state about the size of Anchorage and the control that Anchorage might exercise statewide. And so there would be some resistance perhaps to putting it at Anchorage, but Matsu Burr is far enough away from Anchorage, I think, and yet at the same time close enough to benefit from the infrastructure that the Matsu Burr is a good location. We did have the research people in Juneau run some numbers for us on the cost of relocating the session to this area. They, of course, I think, are somewhat biased. We suggested that they include the costs or the savings in cost by utilizing present facilities in Juneau as state office space and figuring that against the cost of coming here. And in those calculations, they included in the first year's cost of moving the legislative sessions a couple of $1 million for renovating those office buildings to utilize as office space. So, but even at that, the estimate came in at only about $500,000 in cost to locate here. And it is really difficult to assess the savings that occur to the general public, and it's difficult to assess what the situation would be with the different departments when it comes to having commissioners, deputy commissioners available at the legislative hearings. They tend to give us a fiscal note that shows a fairly high cost of that. I believe that they spend far more time running back and forth between Anchorage and Juneau than they like to admit already. And one of the things that concerns me about Juneau as a location for the state capitol, aside from its distance and inability of people to get to it, is the potential danger of flying in and out of Juneau. I think that it is a dangerous flight. We cringe every time we come diving in there. There are times when there are as many as 5 days that people can't land in Juneau. And we had legislators last year, I think, were out for, 4 or 5 days because of the weather. And so what I suggested was that the Matsu Borough or a municipality in this borough construct a building to house the legislature using revenue bonds and then lease that back to the state at cost until the debt is paid off and then give the deed to that property to the state. We presently are using 90,000 square feet in Juneau. It needs to be expanded. We either are going to expand in Juneau or we're going to move out of Juneau. The governor wants to build a big building in Juneau. The Juneau borough wants to capture this thing permanently by building a building and leasing it to the state. They like the idea. So we have to move rapidly and to avoid the governor from making that kind of a move. And so that's why I think it's important that this legislation be passed now. And so I asked for hearing in this community so that we could get some feedback from the people who live here. I have resolutions from the city of Houston in favor of it, resolution from the city of Wasilla, in favor of it. The city of Wasilla has gone on record as being willing to construct the building and provide it for the session site. The Matsu Borough has agreed to consider that as a possibility. So what we need to do is to get the legislation passed and get the governor's attention and to stop any move to expand state government in Juneau. And so I asked Representative Cabina to hold a hearing here, and he was good enough to do that so that the local people could have their voice. And so I appreciate you all coming. I hope that you have something to say for or against this legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Phillips.
Before the bill, because I think you'd accomplish an awful lot all at once.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I specifically came here from Eagle River. I just got off work about an hour ago, and it only takes about 30 minutes from where I live to get to the Matsu Borough. I co-sponsored the bill literally the seconds after it was read across the floor of the House. Reason is, next to Representative Carney's district, my district, is heavily in favor of moving the legislature from a isolated location in southeast Alaska to a more central region. I think the Matsu area passed the capital movement at like 72%, and we in our area about 71%, and we're only next door here. But the main reason for me introducing it is I think you're going to get better government by having it closer to the majority of the people. Now, they may not come to the legislature, but at least they have access to the legislature when there is an issue that means something to them. And lots of our problems, I mean as legislators, is communication problems. Over the years in the legislature, I noticed the attitude of some of my constituents. I get home, get beat up, they don't know what's going on. The following year, some show up in Juneau and say, geez, I didn't realize you guys put in that many hours, and I didn't know about this side of the issue or this side, that side of the issue. And for that purpose, I think the legislature should be, you know, at least handy to the people. And I really believe that we would get better government by having it closer to the vast majority of people, and it would also help our job. It would make it a little bit easier because here these people are here, we can explain it. But if we're sitting down in Juneau in a teleconference situation, they may not be able to see us physically to read the body language or look us in the eye and say you're wrong or you're right. And I felt so strongly about this that when Pat mentioned it, I said if I didn't have anything else going on, either work or another commitment, I'd come out to Palmer to testify in this bill. And I really do feel strongly about this. In our district, we come home once a month during the legislative session, the four of us, and we've been doing this for 15 years. And I'll tell you, we got to get legislators out of that place because the more time we spend in there, the more we get caught up in our own games and our own workings of the legislative process that we forget these folks here. And that's why we go back home. And I'll tell you, I feel spending 2 days at home and then going back down, I feel recharged and ready to go again, knowing full well that I feel that I truly am representing what I believe is the majority of my constituents. And Mr. Chairman, I think you probably feel the same way if it was closer to Valdez where you live. And I know Pat probably feels probably more so than anybody else. But if we have it here, at least it'll be, for me, it'll be 770 miles closer to home.
Well, certainly closeness is a real problem for me, too. You can get home in 1 day. I normally can't. It normally takes me two. If I leave on the afternoon flight, I have to wait till the next day to get back. And if I leave in Valdez in the morning, I have to wait until the night flight to get it in there, so, or take the milk run. So it is a problem. Something I'd like people, when they talk about this bill, it's obvious that the mayor of Wasilla, for example, excuse me for using... is an example, but would support this bill. But I'd also like you to think of alternatives. And one of the best ones I've heard is we're going to end up with a fiscal problem in our state. We all recognize it. Randy certainly does, knowing we're sitting on the Finance Committee. And our university is very expensive, very expensive system. And a proposal that I heard bandied about and I thought had a lot of validity was, what if you took and moved the academic part of the University of Alaska to Fairbanks, to Juneau, and you moved the state capital to Fairbanks? You're saving money in the university system, because we've got 14 campuses. We've got three main campuses, and they're all being underfunded right now. You would save money for the university, cutting down to only two major campuses instead of one. You would not have to build all the buildings over again, because you would exchange buildings. And Fairbanks is far more accessible than certainly Juneau is. Yeah. You can drive to it. And obviously, if you live right here, if you're looking at your own economic advantage, you're not going to buy that solution. But just as Juneau and the people that testified in Juneau very politely, I thought they were very polite in their testimony on this bill. I did. But just as they would not, you know, economically, that will hurt their town. There's no doubt about it. And economically, it would help the valley. But I'm trying to look at it, someone out here in the corner saying, what is the best situation for the state and where our budgets are going? And is there a way that we can actually save money, consolidate our services, and still serve the people the best we can? I'll tell you this much. Somebody's going to testify by teleconference. And no matter where we put the capital. And obviously, everybody in Southeast will give the same argument. Now, Anchorage area, including the Matsu and the Kenai, obviously have grown immensely in the last 20 years and have the bulk of the people who are in the state. And that argument in itself may say, you know, maybe a good one to move the capital. And I'm not looking at it in an emotional issue or any kind of economic advantage for myself, because nobody's talking about moving it to Valdez. Or so when you do make your testimony, I wish that you would maybe put that in the back of your mind, that not just what am I going to gain here in my own community, but what is the state going to gain, and are there other alternatives that maybe is better than this? We do have one amendment. Representative Choquette, who had another item to go to, and that, I guess it's the weather's pretty bad out there for driving. But he has proposed to take out the word Matanuska, Susitna borough, and change it to within 50-mile radius of Anchorage International Airport. Now, this is probably close to 50 miles from the airport, if you went from the airport. So I'm not sure how that would affect the bill exactly. But it would limit part of Matsu borough, certainly.
50, isn't it?
There are other people I know that have indicated to me that if the bill goes to the floor, they would propose other amendments to it. So this issue has been around a lot longer than I've been around as a legislator, just as in my district, the Copper River Highway has been around a lot longer than I've been a legislator. So with that, then, unless some one of you would like to say something further, Randy?
Yeah, Jane, I think I agree with, philosophically agree with you, almost everything you say, but frankly, I mean, let's look at it, the bottom line. You're moving the legislature, not the Capitol. 60 people plus their staffs. If you moved it out of Juneau, I think they'd probably, first of all, they'd probably rejoice to get rid of us. Secondly, I don't think it's going to make a hill of beans economically compared to what they have with the rest of the government. That's my feeling. You got 60 legislators, you probably have about 300, 350 support staff, maybe 400, let's say 400. And there's a housing crunch right now, as you know. You
yeah,
know?
You're caught it.
That ought to tell you something. If we were not there, they probably wouldn't miss us. So I don't really, I know the Juneau people have been making that argument, I just don't buy it. What we're really talking about is the control or the power to make public policy. That's what we're really talking about. And that has effect on individual people, not only in your district, my district, or Pat's district, but all over the state. And I think that if you have the access to the people, some of these public policy decisions we're making would be a lot different than what we're making down in Juneau. Simply because the people there say, hey, we don't want this. This is wrong. Or they say, we want this. This is right. And I'm not afraid to make the hard decisions, frankly, one way or the other. But I just I really believe that we'll have a better government by being closer to it, simply because of my experience going back home once a month. We have 100, 150 people show up, and it's not the same 100, 150. It's 15 years, and it's been longer running than the TV series Dallas. So, and I think we come up with some good, when I'm just speaking for our delegation, come up with some good public policy, and also, and more importantly, I think, to our constituents, that we serve them well and serve them on a first-hand and personal basis. And I just feel real strongly about it, and that's why I'm here, to lend support to the concept of moving the legislature closer to the bulk of the people. And if it was here, it'd probably be about a 30-minute drive, or 45-minute drive from here to the airport, and you probably have to wait another half hour, and you'd be home in less than 2 hours, right?
I like a drive.
Or a drive, yeah. That's it, 6 hours from here.
I just want to add that.
Representative Carney.
I'd just like to add one thing that I neglected to mention, and that is that I have strong bipartisan support. Representative Phillips asked to be first co-sponsor on the legislation, and I have enough votes in the in the House to get the bill passed, and all the Bush legislators without fail in the House have said that they support it because they come, when Gene talks about his problems getting to Juneau, magnify that by quite a bit for people like Georgiana Lincoln that lives up at Rampart and Eileen McLean that lives even further north. And those people are just tired of trying to wade through all the morass of transportation to get to Juneau. They'd like to be able to stop before they get that far away from home. And so I'll leave it to you, Mr. Chair.
All right, I'll take the people that signed up first. Mr. Steen, you're first on the list.
Stein.
Stein, I'm sorry, John.
That's quite all right, Representative Covina.
Kubina.
Right, okay. My name is John Stein. I'm speaking for the city of Wasilla as its mayor, and speaking, of course, in favor of House Bill 198, which I'm sure is obvious that the city would support that, as evidenced by our resolution. I think your approach that the state should look, and if there is an advantage to move the legislature to make it more accessible, that it needs to probably take a position of finding the most advantageous location. Of course, Representative Carney and I have already made that decision, so I don't think there'd be too much problem if you agreed with us. I would like to pass on, of course, that there is almost universal support locally here for the obvious reasons, the fact of having access to the legislature as well as the certain economic benefit of having the activities going on here, even though you're probably only going to have it for 60 days. I'm also certain that
even though the sister cities of Palmer and Wasilla occasionally muss each other's hair over issues of this nature, that we would pledge our cooperation to site the facility if this was approved, as long as one or the other of us could pick the color schemes. The valley obviously offers an excellent infrastructure that's existing, the Parks Glen Highway system that's currently being upgraded, the Alaska Railroad, Anchorage International Airport is well within the 50 miles. In fact, I think as a crow flies, it's probably only about 25 or 30 miles away, as well as two general aviation airfields that are in excellent condition. So there's multiple means of access here that are clearly available to Kenai, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Valdez. And I suspect if you look at the flight records in the winter, you could probably fly from Sitka or Ketchikan more easily to Anchorage and get here than you would be able to get to Juneau just because of the weather conditions. And I'm pleased that that Juneau's been able to curb their criticism over the provincial attitudes that the Valley has expressed over wanting this here. And we will likely do the same so that that isn't really an issue. One of the other important things, I think, is a low-cost energy available in the valley and the Anchorage area with the natural gas fuel, which, by the way, isn't available in Fairbanks at this time. I think there's some real excellent locational advantages to considering Mat-Su as a site. And I thank you very much for bringing this bill forward, Representative Carney, and for the hearing here today.
Thank you. Mayor, what is your electric rates here?
The electric rates, the last time I checked, very close to 9 cents a kilowatt hour.
Meaning about 8, 9.
I think Juneau is cheaper than that, though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yes.
You were talking about heating.
No, I'm talking about heating fuel, yeah. Right. We could probably fit gas lamps if that was seemed to be an advantage.
Any questions or comments? Mayor, I appreciate your being here. Next, I had Gene Woods. Gene?
Support House Bill 198, and even in Wasilla, if that's where it ends up, I would still support it, although you don't have to worry about flushing in Palmer.
Mayor, do you want to come back? I'm afraid if you leave, it's going to get amended.
This is what taking lessons from Mayor Cartier.
No, from Helen Manoff.
But as a former government teacher, if for nothing else, I would urge that the capital be accessible. We've got over 50% of the school children in this state in the Anchorage Mat-Su area. Of my four children, my one daughter was fortunate enough to win the Elks Know Your Government contest, so she got to spend several days down in Juneau. But it's difficult, or it was for me when I came here in territorial days, to tell them about the government that made these rules for them that existed down in Juneau. I mean, that's la-la land to the people up here. It's difficult to get into Juneau. And what I love is when you're going down there to testify, they have a hearing scheduled, and you get there, and guess what? It's been canceled. So, but don't go away. Stay overnight, because we will have it tomorrow. And you show up at the time they say it's going to be held that day, and nope, we've moved it to the afternoon again. And you show up in the afternoon, and by golly, it's been canceled again. So this is one of the things that's difficult. If you're really concerned with something, you'd like to go down and testify in person. It's cost prohibitive. Many people cannot take part in their state government because Juneau is not accessible. We did vote to change the capital, and I'd like to also point out that if you would check with your state government, you would be amazed at how many state government employees are in this area, particularly in the Anchorage area. I know commissioners that fly back and forth every week from Juneau to Anchorage because they have business to take care of up here in Anchorage. The other thing, someone said, what about support services with the fax machines we all have now? That should be no problem. MTA, I'm sure, would be glad to service the Capitol for the legislative site with all the fax machines that they needed. With over half the population, the Kenai and Anchorage and Mat-Su in this area of the state, And if you would check, you would see that the money would be saved on airfare. I did this a number of years ago, checked how much airfare was spent for state officials and the legislators to go back and forth from Juneau. That money would be saved. Those granted that come in from the bush, they all come on into Anchorage anyway. And as Randy states, it's a 45-minute drive, and when the new highway is finished, it would be even quicker than that. And I urge that serious consideration be given to moving the legislature to the Mat-Su Borough, whether Palmer, Anchorage, or Houston area.
Thank you, ma'am. Don Moore. How are you, Mr. Moore?
Thank you. Very well, thank you. I am Don Moore, the borough manager, and I will be making some remarks on this legislation on House Bill 198. On behalf of the borough, the mayor and many of the assemblymen are on their way back from the Alaska Municipal League activities in Fairbanks. Otherwise, I'm certain that more of them would be here this evening. This is a subject that I can imagine that when it's first mentioned, you can veritably hear the eyes rolling back in people's heads saying, oh, here comes another capital move, you know, don't they ever give up. But I do think it is important to make the distinction, and it has been made here by both Representative Phillips and Representative Carney, that this is not a capital move. We're talking about moving the legislative office building. The capital of the state is and will continue to be Juneau, with the executive offices and many of the agency heads still lodged in Juneau, which I think is somewhat appropriate. But we talk a lot about, so this is not being done to Juneau's disadvantage. In a lot of ways, I think it would shake out that it would help Juneau in the long run, and it could even be to their advantage. I think it would be to the great advantage of the people of the state, though, and most of that advantage can be lumped under the word that's been used here a lot of accessibility. The South Central, the Matanuska, Sioux City, the borough in particular, you are all eminently familiar with the accessibility of the highway and rail systems, the airports nearby, and in fact, Representative Cabina, when the Copper River Highway is completed, it'll tie the other coastal city of your district into the area. But there's the other kind of accessibility. I think accessibility is very important. Accessibility is paramount to the legislative branch of government. The governor of the state and any agency heads, any appointed official or elected as the governor is, they do have the ability to get up and close their office door and conduct business in private on certain occasions, and this is rightfully so. If all of the people who wanted to spend time in the governor's office were, if the doors were thrown open continually, there wouldn't be much getting done. But it is of paramount importance that when it comes down to legislation being made, that the process be as open and accessible as possible. And I think that's one of the bedrock fundamentals of our system of government. And the limited accessibility that we currently have to the legislative branch works, I think, to the disadvantage of the state. Many of the other reasons that have been mentioned this evening are also important. It will lower the cost of the operation of the legislation and the cost of the operation, thereby the cost of the government. I think the cost of lobbying will decrease with increased openness and accessibility. Something that is kind of a double-edged sword, but it adds to the expansion potential if the legislature were moved. Expansion will come with time, and we're already cramped for quarters in Juneau the way it is. were we to move to the Valley in a given number of years, you would be looking to expand again, I'm sure. If you're still in Juneau at that time, I don't know where you're going to go. Some of the less tangible benefits, I was glad to hear the educational advantages of this mentioned by Mrs. Woods and others. I can remember at an early age my first opportunity to walk into the legislative halls in Bismarck, North Dakota, and it makes an impression on a youngster that I think is probably different than those of us who are in the swim, so to speak. Adults that are, if we find ourselves visiting the legislature, we're there for a purpose, where we have some particular piece of legislation or somebody to see in mind, and very often we forget to just step back and drink in all that's going on and the importance of it. And we forget how awestruck and the kind of impression that this can make on children. I think it's very important to allow them that accessibility. The Matanuska-Susitna Borough has taken a position on this legislation, and through their resolution number 91024. It's of course a resolution of support, and also they make an attempt to identify that the Matanuska-Susitna Borough Assembly is willing to contribute land, and we have done a very brief cursory site identification, which I will leave with your clerk for the committee's benefit. But we've located a number of sites where something like this would be feasible, that the borough is willing to enter into an agreement to construct the facility through revenue bonding, lease it back to the state, upon the conclusion of which the state would own the building. The idea makes a lot of sense. Certainly. Here's a copy of the resolution. The idea makes a lot of sense, and I think if we would encourage the committee and the legislature to step back and look at it in the light of what makes sense, what is economical, and what could be done, what is achievable. And I think the answers are very positive in all those areas on this particular issue. Thank you.
Could I ask a couple questions,
sure.
Mr. Moore? Is there facilities for housing people in that area now? Is there restaurant facilities? Can you tell me, maybe just explain to me a little bit of what all is right there in Wasilla or in that area that would maybe not be in Juneau for moving, say, another 500 people into that area?
Well, in the
supporting the government.
In the report you have there coming from the borough, we identified, I believe it's four parcels of borough land. I'm not certain what the city of Wasilla has in mind, which particular site they have. But the sites that we